Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. We have a sort of spring up there. The lilacs are in bloom and the forsythia as well, and the smell of skunk is in the air. Smell of skunk is on some of the dogs as well, so they are outdoor dogs for now. We have the most beautiful sunsets this time of the year, sort of pink and gold and orange, and people stand out in their backyards and look off to the west and watch them as the sun goes down and the frogs start to sing to us, which they haven't for months, and the whistle of the North Coast Limited as it heads out west towards Montana. The Lutheran Church held their ham dinner, their annual ham dinner. $8, all you could eat, ham and scalloped potatoes and green beans. And they had the peach cobbler for the dessert, which was all well and good. But people said, well, it's okay, but it isn't anything like what Billy Wynn made when he lived up here. Billy Wynn Causewood, who came from Columbus, Georgia, and lived up in Lake Wobegon many years ago. He was kind of an oddity. He weren't sure why he'd come, but he came up to us in the fall, and he went to work at the bakery. He was a baker. He worked for Mr. Jensen, Jensen's Bakery. Billy Wynn was a large man with little glasses perched on his nose, and he was a gifted baker. Mr. Jensen had been getting up at 2 in the morning for 25 years, and he was glad to relinquish this privilege and to stay home with his wife, though it led to nothing but disaster for him. He got to work a 40-hour week and got to know his wife, Tova, and they discovered that they couldn't abide each other, and so he took up with another woman who, unbeknownst to him, had a boyfriend already. And he shot Mr. Jensen, shot him twice, which actually improved him quite a bit. Kind of gentled him down and made him calmer after that. That was really all he needed, was somebody to shoot him about every 50 years. And he was all sad. Billy Wynn was unlike the rest of us. He was amiable. Of course, he was Southern, so he had that advantage. But he lived up above the back room of the bakery, and he was up early in the morning playing George Jones and Tammy and George and Dolly and Porter on the radio and baking up these beautiful, beautiful pastries, this beautiful peach Danish that you woke up in the morning thinking about it and looking forward to when you could go down there and get it. He was a friendly man. You'd walk in the back door and he'd say hello to you and he'd offer you a piece of whatever he was baking. Of course, he baked bread as well and cinnamon rolls, and he would make raspberry Danish just for, you know, contrast, and blackberry and blueberry and the rest. But it was the peach Danish and the peach cobbler that he made that was just so amazing. Suddenly we weren't Norwegian anymore. We were warm, outgoing people. He told us many different stories about how he came to leave Columbus, Georgia and come up to Lake Wobegon. He told us that he was allergic to grits on account of a hormonal imbalance and that it just was too much trouble to explain to people. That was one story. He told us, too, that he was being chased by a preacher who was following him around town, waving a big black Bible at him and telling him, "Now you know you're going to do it sooner or later, Billy Wynn, so come on, do it now. Don't wait, don't put it off till tomorrow." He just got tired of being followed around by this man. He was a beautiful, beautiful baker. He told us he'd learned to bake out at Fort Benning, that those airborne troops, those paratroopers, having risked their lives, do not settle for second class when it comes to cooking. And so when he made them the raspberry, instead of the peach Danish, they chased him through the woods and the swamps, firing live ammunition at him. He had to dive into the water, and he survived by taking air through a straw. It was a chocolate-flavored child's straw, and he never could tolerate chocolate after that. He was an agile man. He could buck dance like the best of them. But most of all, most important, he made those beautiful, beautiful pastries with peach. It just wasn't like any other peach that you ever tasted. It just improved your whole day. Well, he was willing to work for $100 a week, so Mr. Jensen would put up with his idiosyncrasies. He would disappear every 2 or 3 months, and he'd go off to Duluth or Fargo off to get drunk, and he'd just drink for 2-3 days until he'd spent all of his money, and then he'd sleep it off 4 or 5 days, and then he'd come back to work. Mr. Jensen would not say anything. He was heading off on one of his drunks when he told me the true story, or what he said was the true story, about why he had come from Columbus. He'd come to Lake Wobegon because he had relatives up there. But relatives means a different thing up north than it does in the south. Once you get past first cousin, you can't really depend on anybody up north. And he had just second and third cousins, shirt tail relatives, and they didn't pretend not to know where he came from. He told me the story of his family. His great-great grandfather had fought in the war between the states and come back wounded and addicted to morphine, which, because he was a doctor, he was able to get all that he wanted of it. He spent about 10 years in a kind of a crazed stupor. Family sent him off to a sanitarium to get over it. And while he was there, he found a chemistry lab, and he worked to combine roots and ground leaves of various kinds and to make this tonic. It was a tonic. It was a cure for headaches and for everything that ailed you. It was called Chattahoochee, and he bottled it. They called it hooch, but it was a wonderful beverage, and it was a sensation all across Georgia. He made it by the cask, and they shipped it out of Columbus on wagons that never got to their destinations. Because people would stop the drivers and they would buy the entire load for whatever he cared to charge for. And it was an enormous success. And Dr. Coswood got off the morphine and he was happy. And they bought a big mansion out on the edge of town with big white columns. And they were doing well until this competing beverage came along, which included some of the same ingredients, but it was carbonated. It was called Coca-Cola, and it was a competitor. You see, Chattahoochee, they never carbonated it. You drank it and you felt carbonated afterwards. But Coca-Cola came along and they went head-to-head and competed against each other. Coca-Cola offered Dr. Coswood $2 million for the Chattahoochee formula and all the rights to it, and he just laughed at them. So they put their lawyers to work on him. And they started filing suits against the Chattahoochee Beverage Company. Anybody anywhere in Georgia who had any sort of a complaint, anybody who'd fallen off a ladder, anybody who'd had a bottle of it to drink and then their car crashed into somebody, or anybody who didn't do well in school, or anybody who was just moody or owly, they brought a lawsuit against Chattahoochee. And, of course, most of them were thrown out of court, but some had to be settled. And it just drove the Coswood family berserk. And Dr. Coswood got back on morphine again. And when he was in a morphine state, he sold the Chattahoochee Beverage Company to Coca-Cola for $35,000. And the family was just absolutely crushed. Well, the son ran off to California, and the family made do with what was left. They had a few other aspects to their business. One of the sons had invented a sort of photographic device that would take pictures of documents, but nobody knew what that would do. I mean, just to take a picture of a document and transmit it over a radio wire, why would you do that if you had the document already? It just didn't make any sense. Another of the sons, who was talented, found a way to hook up a typewriter keyboard to a screen, and when you typed on the typewriter, the letters would appear on the screen, but the letters already appeared on the paper in the typewriter, so that didn't amount to much either. So the family just gradually went downhill, and Mr. Billy Wynn Cosmo's mother was terribly, terribly bitter about this, and it was she who spread the rumors about Coca-Cola, that a bottle of Coca-Cola along with two tablets of aspirin would be a powerful aphrodisiac that nobody could resist, which cut down sales among Baptists for a while. Until several hundred Baptists tried it and reported that it did not work. And so then no harm was done. Well, Billy Wynn Cosmo made his home up there in Lake Wobegon, though of course he was terribly sensitive to winter, but he made his home up above the back room of the bakery. He lived up there, and the ovens heated that up pretty well through the winter. He never went outdoors, just sat up there, and he painted his windows green. So somehow he got through the 6 months of winter, sometimes seven and a half, in Minnesota, and he endured it thanks to the peach Danish that he made, which was just absolutely phenomenal. Well, he sort of came to the end of the road, and we could tell he was getting awfully quiet. He wasn't nearly as friendly as he used to be, and he was worried about the rapture. He was worried about the rapture because all the bees had disappeared in town. We tried to tell him that it was because it was October. But he felt that it was a sign from above and that he needed to get right with the Lord and do this now. He said, "I'm just enveloped in sadness. I've never felt so sad in my life when this peach cobbler and this peach Danish will not lift my spirits. I know that I'm in desperate shape." So he went down to the Lutheran church to tell them that he needed to be saved. Well, Pastor Tomerdahl wasn't sure what he meant by that. In the Lutheran church, we do not have an altar call where people come forward as the choir is softly humming, "Just as I am without one plea, but that thy blood was shed for me." We do not do that in the Lutheran church, kneel down and weep and so forth. You are supposed to take care of that on your own time. But he explained what he needed to do, and so it was agreed that he would do this on the next Sunday. The next Sunday. Now, this was already getting into December, and they couldn't do it in December because it was Advent and, you know, we're busy. So he had to put off his salvation until January. And then, of course, he had to think about baptism. Well, he was not willing to just be sprinkled. That was not how he had been brought up. He needed total immersion. And he was too large to be immersed in any bathtub in town. And so the lake was the only possibility. It was January, and there were 2 feet of ice on the lake. But he had to do it. He had to do it for the Lord. He had to die through baptism. So he agreed to do it. They chopped a big square in the lake, and they got it ready for him. He was trembling. He was anxious, but he showed up for church on that Sunday. And sure enough, right after the sermon, just as promised, Pastor Tomerdahl stood there, and Billy Wynn came up the main aisle. He was weeping and hollering and carrying on. He made a wonderful show of it. He came down front, and he had hands up in the air and waving them around, and threw himself down on the altar of mercy, and he said how terrible he'd been. He didn't go into as much detail as we would have liked, but threw himself down, Mr. Coswood did, and Pastor Tomerdahl put a hand on his shoulder, and he comforted him, and then the choir sang, it is well with my soul. And he jumped up, and he did a buck dance right down the main aisle of the Lutheran church. He buck danced all the way out and into the snow, and we never saw him after that. Evidently, he decided to put off baptism for just a little while longer. We're going to take care of that down in Georgia, I assume. We didn't realize until he had left town just how wonderful that peach pastry was that he made, and the peach pie. It was not peaches like any other peaches we'd ever had. But it was dramatic when he left, and we had to go back to being Norwegian again and being cautious and stoical, distant people. And that's why I came down to Columbus, was to try and find that peach tree that those peaches came from. It wasn't an ordinary peach tree. It had a kind of a nutty sort of a aftertaste to it and a slight fragrance of jasmine. He told me when he was about to go off on a drunk that this came from one tree called the Tree of Life. It was down by the river. It was a peach tree basically, but the bees pollinated it with other pollen from jasmine and from pecan trees as well. So it had this peculiar flavor. The blossoms he would dry, and that was what he put into the peach preserve that made it different from other peaches. I'm hoping to find it. I'm looking all over town, walking down by the river, and I think I will just stay until I do. That's the mission Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.